Today we're looking at another of Jesus' kingdom parables. It's in Matthew chapter 13. And if you want to follow in a few Bibles, it's on page number 979. And it's the parable of the weeds. Kingdom parables. The kingdom of heaven is where Jesus is present. Where Jesus is present, then God's rules apply. So it's God's kingdom. And that's the kingdom of heaven that Jesus is talking about. But today's parable, I think, shows that just because God's rules apply doesn't mean to say life is always easy and doesn't mean to say that everything is perfect. Jesus tells at least three parables, probably more, using the image of seeds being sown. And just to keep us on our toes, they don't necessarily always mean the same thing. So last week, Kenny was talking about the parable of the sower sowing the seed. But last week, Jesus said the seed stands for the word of God, the message, the gospel. In another parable, which is helpfully known as the parable of the growing seed, seed doesn't stand for the word that's been sown. It really represents faith. And in today's parable, just to, as I said, keep us on our toes, the seed in the parable doesn't stand for the word, and it doesn't stand for faith, it stands for people, okay? So let's have a look and see what Jesus says. We're beginning at verse 24 of Matthew chapter 13. Jesus told them another parable, the kingdom of heaven, it's a kingdom parable, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. When the wheat sprouted and formed ears, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him and said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he replied. The servants asked him, "Do you want us to go and pull them up?" "No," he answered, "because while you're pulling the weeds, you may root up the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I'll tell the harvesters, 'First collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn.'" So, there's a man, and he sows wheat in a field. And then, after dark, while everybody's sleeping, his enemy comes and sows weeds in the same field. What does that tell you about the enemy? Does it tell you he's brave and noble and honorable, challenges the man to a sort of a good seed weed duel, perhaps, in perfect public view? No, it doesn't tell us that at all. It tells us that he's a sneaky coward. And he's malicious, and he's just not pleasant. I mean, who would do something like that, for goodness sake? There's all this beautifully sown wheat, a field full of wheat. Who would have the imagination and the inclination to sneak in after dark and plant lots of weeds there? So that's interesting, isn't it? That says something about the enemy. There's something seriously wrong with whoever sows the weeds. Anyway, these weeds that have been cynically and mischievously and nastily sown in this beautiful field full of wheat, you can only tell they're there when everything starts to grow, by which time, of course, it's too late. I brought along a couple of weeds. Our garden's actually full of weeds, okay? Are there any gardeners here? Oh, what is it? Okay, testing time, okay? You can tell me. So, first of all, this is quite an easy one. Any ideas? Any ideas? Buttercup. Yay, it's a buttercup. Buttercup. Aren't buttercups nice? I mean, you hold them under your chin, And if you haven't got a beard, you can tell if you like someone likes butter. Oh, they're really nice, aren't they? Unless you're a gardener. Because they produce these lovely, pretty flowers, don't they? Oh, buttercups. If you're a gardener, you know that they've got these horrible, horrible roots, and the roots don't just grow, they grow around the roots of other plants. So it's really hard to get them out without taking the other plant with them. And then what's more, they send off runners. I don't know if I've got a runner here. Well, that's just the remains of another plant. Oh, it's a bit of grass. Anyway, they send off runners that sort of shoot off from them, a bit like spider plants. And then they take root. And next thing, you've got a beautiful bed of hyacinths or whatever. I'm not a gardener. And next thing, you've got this matted, thick, horrible weeds that are choking the life out of all the plants there. So that's buttercups for you. I remember once I spent about a week, literally, of my summer holidays, sleeves rolled up, on my knees, rooting out all the buttercups. Oh, I was going to get them. You know, and it was wonderful. The rockery, it flourished. And then we went away for our holidays, came back, it's full of buttercups again. I hate buttercups. Sorry, if anybody here loves buttercups, please forgive me. Right, what have we got here? Any ideas? This is a bit more difficult. It is actually a sort of herb. Doesn't smell all that good, does it? It's not all that impressive as a herb. It sends these things out. Now, the thing about these tendrils that it sends out is it doesn't send them out like a buttercup overground. It sends them underground. It's called ground elder. Hands up if you love ground elder. Does anyone here love ground elder? I'm going to give it to you. My garden's full of it, strangling the life out of our blackcurrant bushes. Because again, the weeds, the roots wrap themselves around the roots of the other plants. So they're really hard. It's deliberate. You know, it's because it keeps them safe as well. Because, you know, so there's a short lesson in gardening. But that's what weeds are like. They may have very pretty flowers. They may even be, I don't know, nice in your stew. But once they get a hold, they're really hard to dislodge. And they suck the life out of things. They drain the life out of things, the things that are meant to be growing. And basically, they weaken the crop. So I'll just leave these somewhere where they can't contaminate anything. I'll just put them there. Okay? And if anybody wants to take them home, just help yourself. Anyway, that's just an example of weeds. The only time you can tell the weeds are there is when they start to grow, by which time. You know, the higher it is above the ground, that's the same length it is below the ground. So it's too late by the time they start to grow. The servants come up to the farm and say, "Oh, there's weeds. I thought you planted good seed here." I said, "Yes, I did. But someone else has come along and planted these weeds." "Oh, that's terrible. Shall we just tear them out?" And he says, no, it's too late. If you tear them out, they'll cause a lot of damage to the crop. Best just leave it till the end. And then when it's harvest time, I'll send my harvesters and they'll first take out all the weeds. And by that time, it doesn't matter if they damage the crop because it's already born, you know, produced fruit. They'll take all the, tighten the bundles, throw it into the fire. And then they'll take the good seed that's been produced by the good crop. No, I'm getting this tangled up, but you know what I mean. And they'll put that safe in the barn. And then Jesus stops talking. There's this huge crowd. He's been telling them this parable. And then he says, "Right, let's go and have some tea," or whatever. And everybody's going, "What? What was that all about? You've been talking about weeds and fire. And oh my goodness me." And they go away puzzled. And remember I said a few weeks back, the purpose of the parables is to get you asking the question, why? What did he mean there? What did he mean? And you go home and you talk about it amongst your friends and you have sleepless nights wondering, "Oh, what was that about? Was it me? Is it them? What? And that really makes sure that you remember. And it's a really good way of getting people to learn things. So anyway, Jesus finishes his parable and off he goes. But his disciples, The parable, I think, has left them feeling a wee bit uneasy. All this talk of weeds and barns and harvest and burning in the fire and all that sort of stuff, it's all a bit too raw for them. And so later on, they ask him what he means. And again, I said a couple of weeks back, you know, if people are open to God speaking into their lives, then when they read a parable, it'll encourage them to ask for more. Whereas people are closed, they just say, oh, well, can't be bothered, and off they go. So the disciples, you know, they've taken this step of faith. They're on this journey, and they've been presented with this puzzle. And so they go back to the source and say, what's all that about? And so Jesus tells them. And the answer is there in verse 36, just over the page, chapter 13, verse 36. When he left the crowd and went to the house, the disciples came to him and said, explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field. He answered, the one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. That's the phrase Jesus always uses to describe himself. The one who sowed the good seed is me. The field is the world. The good seed stands for the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one. And the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angel. As weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. They will throw them into the fiery furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. I was saying this morning at our morning service that I don't preach about hellfire all that much, for which I apologize. If there are any good Baptists here, that please forgive me. Or brethren, please forgive me. But that doesn't mean I don't believe in it. And the reason I believe in the fact that there is some sort of alternative to heaven, which is just awful. The reason I believe in that is because Jesus believes in it. And he talks about it. And he uses images that we can all relate to. And here he uses this image of weeping and gnashing of teeth, you know, misery. Untold, endless misery. But that's not what I'm going to focus on tonight. So here's this explanation. The sower is Jesus. The field is the world. The good seed are the sons and daughters of the kingdom. In other words, the good seed are the people who welcomed Jesus' rule in their lives, who are citizens of this kingdom, who acknowledge the king. And if we acknowledge the rule of Jesus in our lives, then we'll know that our purpose, what we're created for, is to bear more good seed. That's, if you like, our primary purpose in life, to grow other people who are part of this kingdom, who can share in its joys, can share in all that's offered, all the blessing that's offered. But in the same world, there are those who are like the weeds, sons and daughters of the devil. And just three quick points. Any mention of the devil in today's culture and society is a bit of a red herring because it makes people think of a wee man with horns and a pointy tail and a pitchfork going, mwah, or whatever the devil says. So that's not what we're talking about here. Jesus believed in the devil. So that's why I believe in the devil. And he preached as if there was a battle going on for our souls. That, for Jesus, is a reality. And the devil that Jesus talks about is not this wee cartoon character that appears in a thought bubble, usually. Rather, he is a trickster and a deceiver. Remember, we thought about who, what sort of a person would sneak in at night and sow weeds in someone's field and go away going, hey. You know, I mean, that's what Jesus thinks of the devil. He is sneaky. He works through tricks. He works through deception. He's never straightforward. According to the Bible, the devil's chief aim, this is what he does. This is his purpose in life, His primary purpose in life is to kill and to steal and to destroy. Or to steal, kill, and destroy. I think he puts it in that word. To destroy life. That's what he wants to do. His purpose is to just spoil things. To spoil a field full of lovely wheat. To spoil a church full of eager Christians. To spoil an organization that's trying to help the poor. To just spoil things. To drain the joy out of things. To drain the life out of things. That's what he likes to do. Doesn't make him happy. He just, that's what he does. And his chief weapon is not fear or terror or thunderbolts or melodrama or blood dripping down the walls or everything you associate with Hammer horror. His chief weapon is simply subtlety. He's the voice whispering in our ear, saying, it's okay, really. You can do it. Everybody else is doing it. It won't harm you, really. Honest, trust me. So he deals in half-truths. And he's trying to get us off balance. He's trying us to stop trust, get us to stop trusting God. That's all he's trying to do. So the sons and the daughters of the devil are simply those people who, instead of allowing Jesus to rule in their lives, instead of trusting that his ways are best for them, prefer or have let the devil sneak into their lives and set the agenda. That's all. The sons and daughters of the kingdom and the sons of the daughter and daughters of the devil are very hard to tell apart at first. You only start telling them apart when they start to grow. The sons and daughters of the devil at first can appear very, very attractive, like buttercups, dare I say. Very popular even. But ultimately they don't deliver. They spoil things. They drain the joy out of something. They disrupt. And these weeds can operate at different levels. They can operate at the big society level, and you can probably think straight away of things that have gone horribly pear-shaped, and you think, why did that happen? And when you analyze it, you'll find people who are not letting God rule in their lives. So it can happen at the really big level. It can happen at a community level. You know, big, happy family, suddenly everybody hates each other. Why did it happen? Because a seed of something was sown there, of deceit, trickery, and it sort of soured everything and stopped people trusting each other. Or it could happen just at the individual level. We can think of our own lives. Sometimes the devil gets a foothold and the joy goes. The first thing that happens is the joy goes. But God's response is not to root the weeds out. Because he knows that may seem the simple answer, you know, in a black and white world, oh, let's just wade in there. But it never actually makes life simpler. I don't want to start going on about some of the awful things that have happened in our world. Usually they're made worse by people thinking there's a simple solution to them. There's never a simple solution to evil. There's a straightforward solution to it, but it's never simple. So God's response is not to root out the weeds. God's response is just to leave them there. And he says, don't worry, I'll deal with them at the end. Don't worry. I don't think that means that we're to be doormats, by the way. I don't think that's an excuse to be doormats. You know, if you see someone doing something wrong, the Bible is quite clear that we're expected to do something. So, but in a sense, that's a sermon for another day. So this is not a license to be a doormat and do nothing. You know, if someone's getting beaten up, we walk away and say, oh, well, God's going to deal with that in the fullness of time. I don't think that's what he's saying here. But I think what he is saying is, let's not forget our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to produce that good crop. Our primary purpose is not to go around judging people and condemning people. I think that's what he's saying. Because judging people and condemning people is something that we love doing, although usually not when it's people doing it to us, you know. But it, but that's, I think, is the point of this parable, one of the main points of this parable, there's a few good ones, is our job is to produce good fruit. Let's not forget that. Let's not get distracted, sidetracked by trying to do God's work for him. And I thought three good examples of this. One good example would be amongst Jesus' own disciples. Because Jesus' own disciples weren't perfect. And Jesus knew that. And there are two people in particular who really let him down badly. One was called Judas and one was called Peter. And they both let Jesus down badly. And Jesus loved them both and he warned them both. He said, you're going to do this. You be careful. You're going to do this. And they both did. Now, Jesus could have said, Peter, sorry, nope, you don't belong here. Judas, nope, sorry, you don't, I know what's in your heart, you don't belong here. But he didn't. They were part of his community, and he loved them. And I always tend to think of those two and their response to Jesus' love and grace, because it's their response that condemns them in the end. You know, when Peter betrayed Jesus and denied him, he felt awful. He went out and wept bitterly. But on Easter Sunday, you still find him with the other disciples. So he comes back. Whereas when Judas betrayed Jesus, he felt awful. But he doesn't come back. Instead, he goes and hangs himself. It's like there's a battle going on for their souls. And in Judas' case, devil triumphs. In Peter's case, it's grace that triumphs. It's the Holy Spirit that triumphs. So but it's more Jesus' attitude to the two of them because he loved them both dearly. I mean, Judas was even there at the Last Supper. Although Jesus knew what was on his heart. And when you look at the conversation Jesus has with Judas at the Last Supper, it's like he's begging him not to do this. But he still does it. So there's one example. A second example is someone from my own... It's a Pakistan story, I'm sorry. Oh, it was a guy who really was one of the shining examples in my journey to faith. And his name was Fred. He was an American missionary, and he never gave up on anyone. And there was this one guy called Padre Shuggan, whose dad was an evangelist. And his dad had said to his son, Shuggan, when you grow up, I want you to be a minister. Now, I'm never sure if Shuggan wanted to be a minister, but the pay was good, you know, and you got a bit of kudos. And in poor countries, that often happens. It used to happen here as well, you know. Go into the ministry. If you've been watching Poldark, you know what I mean. But anyway, sorry, I don't know where that came from. Shuggan, don't associate Shuggan with Poldark, please. He just was a bad. He was bad news. He was a real weed in that rich field, and you know he was always in it for the first challenge. Always in it for the money. He was lazy. He never turned up, or if he did turn up, it was when there was a good meal in prospect. And you know, oh, everybody thought Padre Shuggan. Oh, Padre Shuggan. Oh no, he's coming. Oh. And then, but Fred never gave up on him. He never gave up on him. Always invited him, always went with him, always encouraged him, always supported him. And when there was a great move of the Holy Spirit that we were privileged to be part of in the early 80s in that part of Pakistan, one of the most surprising people to be moved by God was Padre Shuggan. And he actually became one of the leaders of that whole revival. And he was genuine, a man of genuine faith. He was totally transformed. And if you talked to him, he'd say, you know, I spent all my life asleep. I never realized that all this talk about God was real. But God has not given up on me. And I've discovered how much he loves me. And there's lots of stories about Padre Shuggan that I could tell you, but I'll keep them to another day. The third example is the example of our own Linda Wright. Now, she's not here, so she can't stop me telling you this. When Linda Wright came, we had a toddler's group that met. I won't tell you which one. but it was really, really awful. It met at the same time as Pram Praise. And what had happened was there'd be no leaders. And toddlers groups, you know, you said, right, let's have an election, decide who's going to run thing. And this woman had said, I'll run it. We didn't know she had a history of running toddlers groups and not running them well, and that she hated the church. We didn't know that. We said, oh, good, someone's volunteered. Thank goodness for that. And gradually that toddlers group went sour. You know, that weed, it gets in there and it tangles things up. So Linda, when she started, she was sort of saying, right, Linda, there's a toddlers group. That's your job. Sort it out. As you do. And I was sort of expecting her to go and have stern words with this woman, saying, it's okay, right, fine, we'll manage. Off you go. But she didn't. And I think she knew that if there had been a confrontation, that the toddlers group would have been the loser. Because, yes, that woman might have then gone eventually, but there had been lots of casualties along the way. Because you know what people are like? There's rumours and gossip and all that sort of stuff. And there'd have been a lot of damage. And it wouldn't just have damaged that particular toddlers group. It would have damaged the reputation of the halls and the church and everything. So Linda didn't do that. She was just gracious and nice and sweet. And we all prayed every week for this toddlers group. And it took months. It took years. But gradually, the mood in that group changed. And it was like gradually, all this woman's supporters and cronies and all the people who are making everybody miserable, gradually they either left or they moved away or the mood changed until it became a completely different toddler's group. It became a kingdom place. And this woman was still there, but somehow she didn't have the same influence. And eventually she just left. She just left. And that's Jesus' way. Says, you know, I'll sort these things out. Your job is to just produce fruit. So, just to sum up, and then something for us just to reflect on. The kingdom is where the place where Jesus reigns. It could be in people's lives, it could be in a situation, it could be in a community. That's what Jesus is talking about when he's talking about his kingdom. It's not perfect. There are good seeds, there are weeds, there are good people, they're weeds. They're sons of God. They're sons of the devil. Our job, though, is not to judge and condemn people. That's God's job. He'll sort it out. Our job is simply to produce seeds, to share the joy that we have and enable it to multiply. Our main responsibility, therefore, on reading this parable, and this is the scary bit, our main responsibility is to be asking ourselves, what kind of seed are we? Are we good seed? Are we weeds? Are we producing a crop or are we just producing pretty flowers? Am I pointing others to the kingdom? Or am I distracting them? Am I getting in the way? The devil comes to steal and kill and destroy life. Jesus comes to offer life in all its fullness. Unless we've experienced that life ourselves, it's very hard for us to share it with others. Let's just take a few moments. Cue the music, Ek. And let's use this time just to process what God's been saying to us. What has God been saying to us tonight? What are we going to do about it? Let's just take a few minutes to do that.